Hey, welcome to the Weed Out, where we talk about nonsense and weed out the bullshit happening in our backyard. I'm Spencer Fox Peterson with my co-host.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna May Booty.
And tonight we have a local writer, Akil Vix, from his Substack On One, and he's a contributor to Jacobin. We have him on to talk all things Western Mass, Berkshires, policing, and how this all ties into what's happening all the way over in Gaza, and what's in between the cop cities in between, supposedly, or presume not presumably, but all this stuff of empire kind of all connects, and I really hope everybody enjoys the conversation we're gonna have, and we will definitely, as always. If you go to our website, www.theweedout.com, every place that you can find Akil, we will link there. And any articles or anything specific we mention, we will link there. So you can always go there to, if you miss it, you can go check it there. And as always, you can follow us on social media. All of the social medias, we're available, The Weed Out. And if you have any questions, you can always email us or send us a DM. With all the housekeeping out of the way, Joanna, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. It's spring. It's getting a little warmer. Walking out with the dog in the mud is an experience for sure. So, but
It is.
other than that, I'm good. And I guess we won't take any more time. We'll get right into it. So, Akil, welcome to the Weed Out.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
We are both subscribed to your Substack. I love the title On One. Akil Vix is On One. I assume that's how you're supposed to read it.
Or just everything in the world is all in one right now.
It
Yeah,
showed up and it showed out, that's for sure.
and it's just it's On One is a nice, polite way of putting it.
Yeah.
So, Akil, tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your work. Just, your
Okay, yeah, I can do the quick Cliff Notes version. I'm from Philadelphia. I didn't have a lot of formal political training. I went to school for computer science and whatnot. But during the rise and administration of Obama, I became more politically active. It's like, oh man, we're finally going to join the rest of the world. We're going to be like those Europeans with free health care and a good regulatory state. And then, of course, all those hopes and dreams came crashing down. And for a long time, I think you could classify me as a typical liberal poster on the internet. But at some point in time, I started thinking that, like, I'm saying all this stuff, I'm having all these pithy comebacks, I'm trying to pwn conservatives, but I need to know what I'm talking about. Like actually be arguing from a point of view and a place of fact. So I started trying to give myself a political education, went down a few rabbit holes, and then at some point I just started trying to write about it and put it down in the words. And I guess my writing kind of started as having like a lot of liberal family members who were like sympathetic but skeptical of a left project, of an abolition project. So, I wanted to like present like, okay, aside, flame wars aside, internet beef aside, here is the case. Here's the sensible case. Let's dispense with hyperbole and emotion. You're wrong, I'm right. Let me tell you why.
We can relate to that here at the Weed Out. That's a very similar origin story. So that at least for the very much, at least that the people that are like-minded abolitionists don't go fucking crazy, feeling like they're all alone.
Word. I
For
mean, that's
sure.
what that it's definitely needed. I will say, like, I don't think we're ever gonna get anything good out of a mayor. Just the way that the job is structurally set up, You know, you are a mayor of a city. You're essentially the sin eater for all that city's woes. You know, the economy sucks. It's the mayor's fault. Crime goes up. It's the mayor's fault. And like, you know, I feel like the mayor of a city has two primary constituencies, and that's the police and the police union in their town and real estate interests. And everything else is just window dressing to get votes in, to get elected. But once you're elected, you could be a one-term mayor if you don't appease those two interests first and foremost. So, you know, I think, you know, we've all grown up with the electoral mindset of like, you know, we got to vote for the right president, or, you know, the right governor, the right mayor, the right senator. Those institutions are structured in a way to be completely inoculated from, you know, good, like genuine grassroots pressure. It really is like a community level. If electoralism is going to have any success, it's going to be like council members, school board, you know, the person in charge of finding pets on the street, like just, you know, any little minor office where, you know, someone has a direct effect on people's lives. If you know, and that's the thing, you know, because I'm looking at like internet, like national trends and like, you know, these broad things. And, you know, I see the way that people talk about stuff on social media. There's a lot of doom and gloom. But, you know, if we can get people to be a little bit more strategic, a little bit more focused, and say like, you know, there is a electoral thing to do. There's also a mutual aid thing you can do. There's also activism thing you could. There are things that we can do. And it's not, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, but you know who went and did all that shit? The right wing did all that shit. The right wing went for the local elections. The right wing made sure they got, you know, in local papers and set up institutions. They have a pipeline where they have their think tanks and institutes and finding young people who are already brain dead conservatives, but they pushed them through the ranks. I don't think the Democratic Party is going to do that, because that's the Democratic Party at this point is a make work program for fail sons from Ivy League colleges. But, you know, the broad disassembled random collection of people that we can call the left, we can do that because we do have like a coherent principled politics. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting people to think more strategically and like, and understand these, how these structures are kind of aligned against actual real systemic change.
And on your electoralism point, even in a perfect society, a utopia, a direct democracy, even voting is one piece. Community, mutual aid, community care, and like you said, making sure the person that's in the there's a system in place in your neighborhood when an animal goes missing or is found, you know, like, you know, that's the little things that does make a difference.
Yeah, like we don't even have that in my town. It was me, and that's why I have cats. So you're right, though. You should help your neighbors and be cat distribution is real.
And I appreciate you bringing up that these positions, whether they're president down to mayor,
absolutely,
are an inoculate or cut off from the grassroots pressure, because until we deal with the system of profit, death for profit, you know, war, weapons of war, prisons, you know, you could elect a socialist president, but they're going to either be handcuffed and nobody's going to work with them because they're not going to be feeding the war machine, well, hopefully, or they'll have to make compromises and feed some of the war machine or the prisons, or they'll get assassinated. I mean, I think they assassinated JFK just for simply thinking about maybe talking about normalizing ties with Russia. Like,
at this point, I don't know how. I mean, there are, like, you know, I can see how someone could say, no, it was Oswald. This is simple. It's fine. But yeah, man,
I know. Didn't they admit that it was actually like a government, like the government new type thing in the last like year or so? I told us aliens were real. I have to look that up, but I think like, they did say they knew.
Genuinely, I do feel like the JFK thing, I don't know if there's like there was a big plan. I just think a bunch of things all moved into place because, you know, supposedly different mafias wanted him gone. Different, you know.
Because of his daddy's,
like the Italians wanted him gone because of his daddy. Yeah. And then there were other, there's petty grievances. Then there was like real like ideological issues, like with the war stuff. Then there was big money about the CIA, like all the things. Like everybody kind of was like, yeah, we're going to let this happen.
I think it might not have been like, I don't think there's ever like a smoke filled room. I don't think there's like a room where people come together and make a big conspiracy, but like, it's like you said, like it, like, you know, the structure, the way that the thing, like the way that the systems of control in the country are aligned, these things just kind of like slowly slide into place. People are in agreement. People have you know, mutual aims and goals, and you know, maybe you let a crazy LSD addled person take a couple shots at the president, you know.
Or a couple guys,
or a couple guys. Yeah,
exactly. And I think like a really, for me, a current example of the like the DNC, for example, and when Bernie Sanders ran, like it was for me like my last hope of even maybe voting for the Democratic Party, and it might be for a lot of people on the left. And I remember watching the like DNC decide on who the candidate was, and it would have been Bernie, actually. I don't know if a lot any of our audience was watching, but like my partner and I started crying at one point because states that were actually by the voters decided to have gone to Bernie were then at the DNC. They're like deciding like another, it's like another caucus basically where they decide. Many of the people, the delegates in those states decided that they would rather have Hillary be the decided candidate. And you just watched like a chance for a second of Bernie having that nomination just fall away. And then you realize how different local, and for me, I already knew, but like, I think for many people, it was a really harsh, I guess, wake up call to how different it is from like a local election for the general election too, because we have all these fail safes in place. I do think I completely agree with you about the mayor's position, and that's why it's something that's so, like, you can't really move them. But I think at least at the local level, they're counting every vote, and they're not necessarily going to just decide to put the vote somewhere else before the general. And I think for me, that was like the last time that I was even able to watch the elections full through. I used to be excited and like so happy about election season coverage. And now it's just so depressing for me.
Election coverage is pretty surreal.
Surreal now.
It's almost indistinguishable from a Saturday Night Live sketch of the same thing. Literally,
like they used to, Saturday Night Live used to make it funny. Now it's like you can't even tell the difference. It's scary and shocking at all at the same time, because I did think as a young person, it's so sad, but I was like ideologic enough to think like at 18 or 20, like, wow, like things will hopefully like change so much more because of the way we vote. And I think what you mentioned is so important for people to remember, because although I have less hope in the electoral system at that level, I have gained so much hope in my community and all the things that you talked about in terms of how you can impact just your local neighbors, or just having like really principled beliefs and values, where when you look at something, you do stick with it and you find the community that you have. And like you said, I don't think we'll see change immediately, but it gives you such a different sense of hope and doesn't give you that gloom and doom constantly.
Yeah, you can like see yourself like have an effect on the world around you. It may not be like the biggest effect in the world, but it's an effect. And
Yeah, it feels like, oh, I have a little control, even though we all know we have none. It's at least helpful to feel like a little bit, you know, just a touch.
I'm proud to admit I've never liked election season. I've never.
Oh, I love. I used to love it. I would just love all the stats and like, because I went to school for like, research and design pretty much, and my background is in psychology. So like, at one point, I even liked Nate Silver. I can't even admit this out loud. I just did it, but yeah. So
Hey.
all of those things broke my heart at one time, you know?
Hey, Nate Silver out here calling on them to replace Biden at the last second. I don't know. Maybe Nate Silver's is coming based.
I
I
didn't
think
see that actually.
I'm make I this is the weed out. Normally talks hyper local, but this is my conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. This is just my like fun headcanon, I guess is the best way to put it. We are currently in a timeline where the writers of Veep are deciding, and
Oh God,
Kamala
Ainsley.
Harris is making her move with that ceasefire bullshit on Sunday, the six-week
Yep.
ceasefire. I swear to God, because in the show, you never see the president ever, like, right?
Nope.
And we never
Nope.
see Biden, right?
Nope.
And
Behind closed doors, though, he is vigorous.
in his supposedly. And then, there's all the things about the first lady and all that stuff. I don't know if anybody's familiar. The show's great. Go watch it. It's fucking hilarious. But we're in deep. And when she makes her move, he has to retire and resign for health reasons.
Yep. Oh man, it really is Veep. Oh,
It
Jesus
is. We're in
Christ.
so many timelines, so it's like Back to the Future 2 as well. Overlap.
Right. Yeah. And then there's
It's weird.
the Biff Tannen as president, Donald Trump as president timeline. By the way, I think Donald Trump's like in his mind, like psychologically, like in his mind, he is president.
Yeah. Did you
He's,
see his?
he,
He did a little talk today. He was so
oh no, I
excited
missed
about the
it.
Supreme Court. Oh, it's like he's doing stand up too to me. Like, so
Oh,
if he
he's doing
wasn't running
stand
for
up.
office, I'd be like, yo, this is funny. But like, it's terrifying that people think it's for real, you know?
The thing that people don't get about Donald Trump, the thing that liberals don't get about Donald Trump, and like it's something that you kind of have to be like extremely online to understand, because that's where the conservative movement has kind of like been drawn into, is that Trump is a master of anti-comedy, right? Like he's a master of, I'm going to say something so unfunny, so blunt, so on the nose that you have to have a reaction. And you have to take it as like humor, even though you know I'm deadly serious. And it's like the perfect vehicle for a far right, nationalist, Nazi, the whole everything on that side of the spectrum that's dark and trying to get out. That's a perfect vehicle to pull it out of that shade, is that like, oh, we're just telling jokes. Oh, we're just being funny.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's scary. It's really scary to watch.
P.T. Barnum could never.
Yeah, no, he is so good. Okay, it's not that he's
He
so
is
good
really
at it.
good. That's,
We
well,
have to.
he is, I think, in a way, but I hate to say he's good at anything, if that makes sense.
It's that he himself is a signifier for all these things on the conservative movement that have been like bubbling beneath the surface. It's not some. I don't think. And I swear, I talk to a lot of like crazy fucking conservative people online, and after a while, you get the sense that it's like, I don't think they believe anything about Trump either. I don't, in the heart of hearts, if you gave them the true lies, true serum, I don't think that they actually believe that Trump is like the second coming. He's going to save America. All they know is that Trump makes liberals mad. And that's the only thing that's in their heart of hearts. That's the only political outcome that is achievable at this point. And like, truth be told, that's a lot of liberals too. A lot of liberals, even a lot of the left. Like we've kind of like,
That's fair.
as a people, we've kind of like abdicated the idea that we could have an effect on the political process, because it's been so alienated from us. And so like all we're left with are these online victories, these libidinal urges to like, I made that guy feel mad. And like in a electoral basis, and in the on the world stage of politics, Trump, without having to even say anything, is just that. He's just a giant like emoji of conservative angst. You just have to put him out there, liberals get mad, and that's all you really need to know. And the Democrats don't have that. They don't have, maybe you could say Obama was that, and once upon a time, and Obama was an extremely popular president. And you know, for a lot of people, it was enough that his existence pissed off conservatives. And I think Trump is kind of a reflection of that. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's a coincidence that there were so many Obama to Trump voters. I think that that kind of reflects the idea that there people are disillusioned with the neoliberal order. They're disillusioned with, you know, just letting corporations dominate every aspect of their lives, being more and more alienated from their jobs, from their families, from, you know, we have like nerds from Harvard mediating our friendships. Like, this is getting out of hand. And I think both Obama and Trump had like some mimetic value of a disruption of that, even though neither one of them represents any true disruption, but they were able to present as such for a lot of people.
And bringing it local, I don't know if you saw it last Saturday, so March 2nd, there was a Trump rally in downtown East Hampton where
I drove by that shit.
Yeah.
I was running errands. I needed to go get, I don't know. I was getting diapers or something, but yeah, I drove by those guys.
Was it well attended?
It was attended.
It was attended. Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to like just get my mental picture. I want to say it may have been like 10 people maybe. Okay. Yeah, they had like they had a car parked a little bit ways down the road where there was like flashing lights to get people's attention. They had a whole bunch of Biden sucks signs. And I mean, it's kind of like, you know, to what I was saying, like there was no policy prescriptions. They had signs for it. You know, it wasn't like, let's do this thing to make your life better. It was, you know, Biden sucks. Liberals like Biden sucks. Let's go Trump. You hate Trump? All right, let's go Trump. It was all just, you know. It was antagonism. It wasn't anything positive.
And it's fascinating when you go like, yeah, when you see the sign like fuck Joe Biden, you're like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like, we're on the same side. No, yeah. I agree, honey. Like, sure.
Yeah.
Let's go. but I have to say, like, I don't think I'll ever have the right way of describing this. Because thankful isn't the right term. But without Trump, I would still probably be willing to subscribe to the blue-red thing. Without his kind of spark that lit a kindling, because I was always like, I've never been a registered Democrat, but I'm not a fucking Republican. You know, I guess I would vote for Democrats. I live in Massachusetts, but like, just realizing there's no good Democrats, because at the end of the day, like you said, the neoliberal order of being pro corporate, like every Democrat is pro corporation, every single one of them. Yep. And I don't like
and
that.
Just a reminder to everyone in the audience that most of America doesn't vote and is not registered as a Republican or a Democrat either.
Aren't. What's the point, you know? Like, I forget. It was some college did a study where, like, you know, if, you know, a majority, the policies that are supported by a majority of citizens have maybe about like a 30 to 40% chance, maybe even lower, but some below 50% chance of getting enacted. Whereas if a policy is supported by big business and corporations, it's about a 90% chance it's going to get passed. And, you know, people, you might not be watching the news, you might not be watching MSNBC or Fox News or whatever, but people feel that, you know, people feel that like, oh, nothing, the government can't do anything anymore, you know. And so, like, what is the point of voting? What is the point of participating in this system if it doesn't respond to anything?
Yeah, this is the 50-year conservative plan. And I wanted to bring up earlier, like, when I just didn't know how to say this, but when you brought up how the Republicans have like a system to like feed people up and through, and they even have the Heritage Foundation, all that stuff. The thing that kind of happened was all of our grandfathers, so to speak, our political grandparents, grandmothers, grandfathers, elders, they're all fucking dead or jailed.
Mm-hmm.
So this is part of the 50-year plan of the conservative movement, which America's always bad. Let's just be fucking real. And they wanted to undo all the shit, but from the late, for all the FDR shit, they wanted to completely undo it. And we're seeing Endgame.
And I think, you know, if just going by the two party, you know, look at that, the two parties have like gone from, you know, when there was an era of Democratic dominance, you know, FDR, Great Society, you couldn't even imagine Republicans taking over, to where we are now, where, you know, a fucking game show host is probably going to be president again for a second time. But there was a moment where the Democratic Party completely split off from its radical roots. You know, any sort of radicalism was shunned, opposed. We're going to reconstitute our electorate as this professional upper middle class group of educated, you know, white collar smart people. And the Republicans, they did you know, the fusionism, where you had the libertarian neocon ghouls finding common cause with these social conservative, the evangelicals, which you're very aware of, and they formed this like tenuous alliance, and it ended up being, you know, pretty successful, because you could bring in racism, you could bring in, you know, religious bigotry, the abortion issue, you could have all these social issues feed, you know, votes and energy into a conservative project without having to really mess with the economic side of it. You know, like the social conservatives got everything they wanted, and the libertarian neocons got everything they want on the economic side. And because the Democrats were more or less in agreement with the neocons on the economics of it, that was the thing that carried the day. And that, you know, because the Democratic Party had no radical base, they completely jettisoned it. They replaced it. You know, the locus of left politics was moved from the workhouse, from the shop floor, to the neighborhood, to the ivory tower. And, you know, I worked at Smith College for like a year. I understand, like, there's value in having people who don't do anything think about stuff. I'm not gonna like, you know, write that off entirely, but that is a change, and it has a, you know, it alienates people from the process of being able to understand and you know, wrap their minds around politics. And, you know, like, I know when I was growing up, everyone around me was like, ah, politics, that's not for me. That ain't got nothing to do with me. Like, that's them up there. Like, they, you know, and that feeling doesn't come up. That's not a natural feeling. That's not something that, like, people just happen to be that way. That was purposefully, you know, cultivated in the public by both parties to some extent. It just so happened to favor the Republicans overall down the road, because all they need to do is deconstruct everything. They don't have to like actually build anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No, I just want to say absolutely in that. And I guess for me, the reason I did become so interested in politics at a young age, like right when I could vote, was because I was so terrified of what the Christian right had been preaching throughout my teen years that I immediately wanted to vote against anything those people cared about. And it was usually the Republican Party. And I will say, and another point I just wanted to bring up for the audience, I wonder if you agree, in 2010, when Citizens United was like put forward and the Democrats allowed that to continue and happen, I think it really just happened to the quote, like, neocon corporate, like, it fused the two part, like, even farther, to the point where now there's like not even a chance of a grassroots movement or anything like that ever being overturned either.
Yeah. I used to think that like Citizens United was like the turning point, like that was like, oh, this is when everything, and I'm not, for the most part, yeah, I agree with that. I also think there was so many other things that were like that moment was kind of overdetermined a bit, right? Like that
makes sense, actually. It just was like the final nail in the coffin, kind of.
Yeah, that's like the culmination of everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. A terrible amount of time it led up to that, yeah. But I think for a lot of people that woke them up a bit. And I know I get that.
No, like in terms of, I think there is like some, there's a little bit of hope to be found in the fact that the, you know, the fusionist this consensus within the Republican Party has kind of broken down at this point. Now, you know, the neocons are probably are getting like led around by the nose by the social conservatives. They've kind of won the day because, you know, people realize like, okay, this neocon economics doesn't really do anything for me. I'm going to go lean fully into the culture war. That's, you know,
it really is the social part now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which scares me. We're back to me at 17. Like, please, please, please vote the other way, everyone.
Well, but here's the thing. I think they might have jumped the gun.
Yeah, I do too.
I think they might have jumped the gun. I think like a lot of people think about, you know, people talking about kitty litter in classrooms as they're weird. Like, why are you talking about this? This is weird. You know, and you know, you see it in like the school board elections across the country. Like, these guys aren't winning, you know. Like, they can get a lot of press. Mainstream media loves to cover them because they're flashy and whatever, and it gets liberals' blood boiling. But on a basic level, these guys still aren't speaking to anything that like actually animates voters. It's just a niche of extremely online weirdos who like find the whole woke thing compelling.
The thing about the modern Democrat, at least outreach, that's baffling to me, I mean, beyond vote blue no matter who, basically it feels like an abusive partner. Like, they're like, if you don't vote for us, they're gonna hit you, you know. Mm-hmm. That's their only policy suggestion, and like this vague, we're gonna restore Roe. How are you gonna do that? Oh, we're gonna try. You know, like, no, literally, no. Like, I'm not even exaggerating. Yeah.
That's forever. But like, out of fear, many of us also were hoping that they would eventually do these things that they.
And then Joe Biden said on a hot mic, because God love this man in the hot mics. he said something like, you know, I'm where I stand. I don't necessarily agree with your right to choose, but the foundations of Roe is solid law. And it's like, and this was like this. Yeah. He said this. This wasn't 10.
Well, he's like 81. I'm not even shocked.
Oh my God. I'm so sick of this guy. I was sick of him when I first met him in like the mid 2000s, and finding out he was in office my whole life before that was really when I was like, fuck this guy. And then as things go on, like, yeah, there's a couple funny moments when he was vice president, I guess, like,
yeah,
him being goofy. But like, dude, Obama fucked us by whitewashing that motherfucker. Look a little more palatable.
He was like our nice grandpa.
Yeah, he's learned from his racist past. He just eulogized Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
What?
Didn't he have a quote like I served with racists before. These guys are more racist than the racists I've served with.
I would believe it. He has said some shit, like, for sure.
Well, again, thank you so much for just jabbing with us, but I guess I should probably get to please plug something and that, you know, you're excited about, whether it's upcoming or something that you posted recently.
You know, it's funny, I recently reshared, it's an article I wrote like 4 years ago, but it was called On Getting Your Leftist Friends to Vote for Biden. And basically the gist is like, just stop treating us like idiots, man. Like, right. Stop, like, treat us like we are people with fully formed politics that are based on things that we observe and learn and read. We are not like just lemmings. We thought Bernie Sanders was so charismatic. We had to just follow Bernie Sanders everywhere he went. Like, you know, if you really think, basically the gist of it is, if you really think that Trump is the existential threat that, you know, he probably is, take it seriously. Like, don't act like a spoiled, like, older brother mad at his younger brother because he pulled the cord out of the video game. Like, you know, if you need to build a coalition to stem the tide of this, you know, apocalyptic end of democracy threat to our nation and the spirit of America, then you need to actually reach out to the people who are the most politically engaged, the most energetic, the most willing to knock on doors. Like, I've knocked on doors. My friends knock on doors. I've made phone calls. My friends make phone calls. We are ready to do all of that. But you got to treat us like adults. But, you know, that's an old. The last thing I'll plug, the last thing I posted on one is Black History Month just ended. Rest in peace, Carl Weathers.
That was so heartbreaking. Thank you for saying that. I loved him. Oh,
it's so sad. Yeah,
it is.
But the last thing I posted was on just kind of like the hidden politics of Black History Month and how, you know, growing up, the way I experienced Black History Month in Philadelphia and like a lot of my peers was that, you know, it was very much beholden to a great man discourse or a great man theory of history. Like, here are these great men and women who did an amazing thing and they contributed to bringing Black people along and contribute. You know, you hear the word contributions a lot when people talk about Black History Month. And it wasn't until I was like a whole ass adult that I learned about Black leftism, like Black solidarity, you know, what people about like Lucy Parsons and A. Philip Randolph, you know, the people that, you know, don't get to have quotes on, you know, inside Target and their like celebrate Black voices display. And I think, you know, part of the way that we Black History Month was structured and the period of time that it was developed in plays a part in that. So, you know, with that, I want to take these things that like we take for granted in the culture and kind of like peel back the layers and like, okay, these things have roots. These were socially constructed things. They're not just like, you know, Black History Month didn't just come down out of nowhere. It was a political project that had political goals. And, you know, you may not agree with those political goals if you actually went and looked at how that thing was constructed and how like it, you know, like I remember hearing about George Washington Carver and his like 3,000 uses for the peanut. And thinking about that now, I'm like, oh, every person that I was, you know, taught about for Black History Month was presented to me as they made a great contribution to capitalism, right? This person invented this. This person was the first person to break this record, you know, make this much money. You know, even the way they talk about, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., it's like, oh, he like allowed, you know, because of his sacrifice, Black people were allowed to contribute to America. That ain't Black history. Black history is a struggle against America from the jump. It's a struggle for abolition. It's not a struggle to fund the cops more. You know, it's not a struggle to paint Black Lives Matter on Washington, D.C., but then the next day throw tear gas at a protest. Like, you know, actual Black history is so much more about solidarity. It's about mutual aid. I could do a double plug. I recently reviewed a book about just the history of Black labor in America for Jacobin. And, you know, in that book, you know, they pick a few main characters here and there to like give the story some sort of narrative flow. But reading it, you can't help but like think of it as like, no, these were communities that were struggling. These weren't individual people. This wasn't a story of pulling people up by their bootstraps or like, you know, standing alone bravely against, you know, unnamed racist specters that, you know, don't worry about them. They're all gone. There's no more racists in America. We solved that. No, it's a story of unity and just solidarity, just, you know, and I want to get that back into the American historical canon, not just for like Black history, but for all history. Like, it, you know, we don't get where we are. We're not talking on, you know, through the internet, through this, you know, radio waves in the air. If we didn't all as a species figure out and learn how to work together and not just to like make a bunch of money, but to like create the conditions for human flourishing. And so like, I think if we can change a couple minds here and there to start rethinking, you know, this historical project, this historical moment is not about like, what can I do to get by, but rather what can we do to lift each other up? I think we might have a chance.
There's a lot of people in America. I can only speak for America, and I can't really even speak for America. But in the world I live in, I feel like a lot of people need community, and we need to find it somehow. And capitalism is really good at monetizing everything, and third spaces are gone. So we like to, you know, a good place is possibly your workplace, you know, a little union organizing. At the very least, like, at least it feels like a camaraderie, you know, like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be even an official union, but like, build solidarity with your coworkers. It can do wonders for your psyche, because the individualist shit, it doesn't work.
No.
And people that win the individualism game, like Elon Musk, Donald Trump, they seem miserable to me. It's like a miserable fucking existence. You know, like, who? That's a prison on its own.
They end up having to spend most of their life and fortune, like, trying to create the simulacrum that people like them. You know, like Trump and Elon are the way they are because deep down they realize no one likes them and they really want to be liked.
Yeah.
I mean, the man bought Twitter that people would like him.
Mm-hmm. It didn't work. It didn't work.
Yeah, the one place, like, Twitter is it's silent.
I love Twitter. He ruined it.
The maddening thing about Twitter, and also the beautiful thing about Twitter, is everybody hates being there.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so like, why would you buy the app that everybody? The thing is, we all hate being here right now. It feels like tension talking to some of these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. So thank you so much. We're going to link those in the show notes. So www.theweedout.com show notes, Akil Vicks with his Substack on One, and also writes for Jacobin. Just want to remind everybody, without further ado, everybody, we're going right into Ghoulery and Tomfoolery. This week's Ghoulery and Tomfoolery comes from The Shoestring. Dusty Christensen, writing. Can everybody see on the screen what we got here? So for those at home, on the audio version, remember, we're on YouTube now, but you know, we don't put much production into YouTube, but you can see this if you're on YouTube, just so you know. Article from The Shoestring, written by Dusty Christensen. Headline: Records. Former Greenfield mayor wanted to fund police raises with COVID relief money. The revelations come a day after the city council rejected the huge raises for the city's top cops. Now, new documents obtained by The Shoestring show that former Greenfield mayor Roxanne Wetgardner hoped to use COVID-era municipal relief money to fund big raises as she negotiated with the city's top cops in the last days of her administration. Excuse my reading. And when the new mayor, Virginia Ginny DeSorger, didn't use those funds to pay for the raises, the recently retired police chief suggested he may take a legal action against the city. The article goes on, a lot more details.
Yeah, I would tell the audience at least the raises, the amount. It was like 25%, I think, for Chief Haig, if I'm correct. Excuse me, 20% for Chief Haig and 25% for Chief William Gordon, who was then made the chief after Chief Haig retired. But then Ginny DeSorger replaced him. So I just want people to see, like, these would be like $33,000 to $35,000 raises in 1 year, bringing their salaries up really high in a community where the median salary for that community, I don't know it, and I'm 90% sure it's under $50,000 a year.
I think I last
put those numbers out there.
It was in the high 30s.
So, yeah, low.
Not good.
But these people are paid so much money.
And keep in mind, everybody, the context of this is Greenfield. The reason this mayor and this chief were already under fire is because they had to settle, or they lost a civil lawsuit against a former employee over racism allegations, and or I guess they're not allegations, they were found responsible for racism in the police department against their own. So you can only imagine what this whole thing is about. So,
and that cost the city $1.5 million, just to throw that number out there for everyone to know.
Oh, great.
So was it that, like, you know, maybe like long COVID made them be racist towards their own people, and that's why they have to appropriate the COVID relief money?
Yeah, so I guess your questions are as good as mine.
They are so good. So good.
I like following police, and I follow a lot of police shit. Like, that's pretty much my hyperfixation. This shit's crazy. But Akil, so you're the guest. Please give us your. We've been contacted.
Do you want to scroll up to the picture real quick? Just one more time. Are those the most cop looking cop motherfuckers you've ever copped? Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that guy in the blue shirt is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm pretty sure that's Scully from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
and Chief Haig, like, if you saw his face, like, during the videos of his, like, discussion after he lost the civil suit for the racial discrimination, he looks to me exactly like Ricky from the Trailer Park Boys, if you know that show or movie at all. He's got that vibe and tone when speaking to them, but he talks to them like a total, like, he pretty much is just so rude and unbelievable too. So it's wild. This is the one of the wildest police, in my opinion, police, like, barracks in the area. So I'm really happy he's retiring and leaving, but man, they are one of the worst, in my opinion. That is my hot take on these guys, actually.
I'm so disappointed. I shouldn't be disappointed. I am so disappointed, because my first experience at Greenfield, I went up there to, I was meeting friends at the People's Pint on Greenfield.
Yeah, nice place.
Nice place. And I saw, and it was some storefront. They had Gritty. You guys know Gritty, the mascot.
Gritty, heck
yeah. Philadelphia Flyers mascot. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, Greenfield. And they said Gritty Field. And, you know, they had all these, like, leftist messages in the window, and got a Gritty in the window. And I'm like, ah, Greenfield. No, there's nothing good in the world. Not even Gritty Field is immune from fucking just whiny cops whining about their pay.
It's so true, but the only good thing is they voted out that mayor, and hopefully we should keep our eye on the glimmer of hope is the new mayor, Jenny DeSorge. She's done interviews for us when we wrote for the Shoestring before, and she is a much more left-leaning person who is very willing to discuss things and not give these raises to these individuals and stand her ground. So I do have hope for the people of Greenfield, because those signs are still there, Akil, and I live close by. And I think there are a lot of people in the community that really did organize together, because the mayor that was in Mayor Weidengartner, I say her name wrong every time, Roxanne, who gave these horrible raises, she lost by, like, it was like 30-70 type, like, she got crushed. It was like a third of the vote went to her, and then hopefully Mayor DeSorge will be able to do something. And even if it's not give these outrageous wages to these new cops and kind of just fund the schools, but so that's my glimmer of hope, if there's any.
No, that's awesome. What were you gonna say?
That wasn't your Guler and tomfoolery, because you can't do glimmers of hope and Guler and
tomfoolery. Well, I know, but I'm really excited for the people of Greenfield who organized to get this mayor in place and worked. A lot of the city councilors are also, like, there's at least two abolitionist city councilors, so I can't help but share that here. I'm sorry. Yeah, yes, these are ghouls. These are ghouls and fools.
Shout out to the what is it, the People's Budget of Greenfield?
Yeah, that's one of the groups. And then there's Social Justice for Greenfield is another, like, local group that was working together. And they all just talked to their neighbors and talked about this budget line. And I think sometimes we need to talk to our neighbors. We might not agree about everything, but we may agree that our police chief shouldn't get $40,000 raise in 1 year.
So yeah, like, you don't need a whole person's starting salary raise.
I just, I'm like, who else gets that? Can we all get that? Like, wow.
I remember when I graduated college and I like made like $27,000 a year. I was like, oh, I'm rolling in dough. Yeah. I should have took steroids and got scared by acorns, and then I would have made a lot more money.
We all became cops.
Hire a street sweeper, for God's sake.
Yeah, you could hire like so many other positions that would help the town. Totally. But thankfully these raises, I hope, won't go into effect. We should all keep an eye on Greenfield, though, as the year
for sure
goes forward, because their local politics are interesting. And Pittsfield's another spot where local politics, I think, are interesting because there's a new mayor in place. I don't know a ton about him, but our mutual friend Michael Hitchcock was on recently and talked a little bit about the new mayor there, and hope, like, just any hope you can have in the city councilors. Like you said, a lot of times mayors really can only do so much, and the city councilors are the ones that actually vote and make the changes too.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, if you have any hope for a progressive or leftist mayor, it's going to be in giving them the support structure on the local level, so that they can push back against, you know, Scully and Meathead John over here, Jack Reacher looking motherfucker.
Very, like, it does really look like a stock photo from any police show. Mm-hmm.
So my ghoulery and tomfoolery. So my issue, obviously, I agree with all of your statements on, you know, these look like a central casting. This guy is on Reno 911 as the who's the dude with the who always wears the bulletproof vest on the outside. That guy.
Oh yeah. What was his name? If you haven't watched Reno 911.
Junior, I think his name.
Junior. Yeah, it sounds right.
So, anyways,
I haven't seen that show in a long time.
That's my take. And this has been, so we've been talking about national politics, and this is actually a point I've been raising. The reason I, again, head of the curve, I was outwardly saying about Joe Biden, prior to Gaza, prior to all his shitty COVID policies, when he directed cities to use COVID funds to beef up police militarization and all that shit. I was like, he's not getting a fucking, I don't care what he does. He could literally take apart our nuclear infrastructure, our nuclear weapon infrastructure, and broker a peace deal with Russia. I will not fucking vote for him just for that. Like the on its face, COVID money to cops, like it's for things related to COVID. Like maybe we could, like I brought up street sweeper earlier. I don't know. Maybe we could fix our pipes, right?
Yeah.
Or deal with our sewage in a better way. Maybe we could find a way to turn our sewage into fuel. I literally do not know. Literally anything. And here at the Weed Out, we have a
sewage fixation.
Poop tubes. I don't want to die of fucking cholera.
I don't. Fix that issue. Stop dumping it into the rivers. Stop paying the cops money and flushing doo-doo into the rivers. No.
And so it's we do. Because that's also jobs. So don't tell me this is a jobs thing. Like, we don't want to keep. Fuck you. I've never gotten more than a 3% raise at a job. Fucking 25%. And dude, under your watch, there was a racism case that cost you how much money? God damn. Like, you got, and then to like the gall to be like, I'm going to sue you because you didn't give me that COVID money. But I also hate Joe Biden. He probably hates Joe Biden. Like, it's just like, I hate everything about these people. And this is why, like, cops will always be a hyperfixation for me, like, no matter what, because I just feel like I met this kid when I was 6 years old, and I wasn't a popular kid, but, you know, I wasn't immune to getting picked on either. Like, I was kind of like, sometimes it was just your bad day, you got picked on. And I remember those kids that were just sick of picking on the kid they picked on every day, and then would come and pick on me, and they became fucking cops. And it's like, I know they did. I know for a fact. I'm not saying that hyperbolic. I'm saying I know for a fact those guys became cops. So it's just like, I fucking hate every single one of these motherfuckers. They only think about themselves. Being the leader of a gang, you'd be better off being in an actual mafia, because, first of all, 180,000-ish is a lot for any job.
Dude, for Greenfield, that's like crazy. He's like the king of Greenfield.
He could make more money being a real gangster, but this is like gangster shit. Like, I want 40.
He's got to work then, though. He just sits at home whining this way.
No, I because think about it, because if you get that raise, then you probably do like overtime for no reason, you know, overtime doing paperwork after you've harassed like, you know, some poor Latina grandmother. And then you do your moonlighting where like you force some small business owner to pay you like $250 an hour to be a useless bouncer. Like,
yeah. And he apparently got drunk at the country club all the time and was like allegedly drinking on the job. So this guy was like, you know, the model cheat.
But
of America.
He's out of Central Cat. Like,
that's thankfully he's gone.
That's every other town in Massachusetts.
And oh, yeah. That's why. Check your budget line.
States. We're supposedly one of the better states about mm-hmm. this shit, which is just bananas to me, because I feel like in typical, you know, liberal Democrat fashion, spending like they're drunk, but they only spend on guns.
Well, it's, our two major, you know, Boston and Massachusetts and Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, those are the two, like, ground zeros for the modern police force. You know, like, professionalization first happened in Philly. Boston was the first to have uniforms, I believe. But like the standardization of, like, you know, let's just make this the armed wing of capital. Let's take some tax money, whatever COVID money, let's put it into these guys, because they'll protect our property rights and they will control all this excess labor. You know, all these excess Italians and Irish and Black people that we don't want to hire right now, we can just send the cops to go rough them up, and that's a worthwhile investment.
And I'm just going to say, you brought this up, I just want to bring this up again, everybody. If you hate Nazis, you should hate the Mass State Police, because the Nazis like their uniform so much that they copied it. All right. They changed the colors, maybe had a little armband, but it's essentially the same cut and all the same regalia and they're all that bullshit. When you see like the state troopers at graduation, like, that's the fucking Nazi uniform. And
I just disagree with all police.
Change it. They didn't change it. I would have changed
it. Well, like, yeah, but I just don't like any cops. Like, I don't care about their dumb uniform. So I just don't like any of them.
Cops are Nazis.
All cops.
Cops are Nazis. Like,
I know. I'm just.
We literally have secret police in the United States. And not only like in like the Secret Service and yada yada, CIA, the FBI. Like, our local police precincts have fucking secret police. We don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Crazy. This is, don't tell me we're not in the fascist bad place. This is the fascist bad place.
Like, yeah.
We're just, not for me. My life's okay. Like, but, you know, the complexion of my skin and where I come from helped. So.
There's a lot of good definitions of fascism, but I think the quickest one that I think is really can like make a lot of this clear. Fascism is when empire comes home. It's when you can't expand anymore, and the only thing left to do is to take all of that violence of colonialism and put it back on to the subjects who are no longer the benefit. You can no longer release the tension inherent in capitalism that you have so many with so little and so few with so much. You can't release that tension with free real estate anymore. You can't send them out to the colonies. You can't send them out to the Wild West. So you got to deal with them somehow. And so you fund some police and you throw them in jail and you make money off them that way.
It's crazy. It's absolutely disgusting. And the homeless, what they're trying to do with, trying to legalize, making not having a home illegal. Like, dude, we already went through this. The loitering laws, like, we've been through this shit. Like, why does it feel like, let's just try it again, I guess, is basically.
Yeah.
It didn't work last time. It ended up pretty bad, actually, for a lot of people, both sides. Like,
it'll work fine this time. This time we have AI to make it work this time. So,
well, that's
they didn't have AI. They didn't have Watson last time.
Right. Oh, we didn't get a chance to talk about AI today. And, you know, with your computer programming background and stuff, I'm sure you have a lot of great stuff to say about that, because I'll be honest with you, I know nothing about it.
It's just, I'm sure we're getting to the end of things, but we can pick it up later. It suffice to say, AI is a fascinating thing because it represents like the, it shows you how desperate capital is. They're trying to create like a new form of free real estate out of whole cloth so they can restart the whole process of capital accumulation all over. Even though now all the physical capital is bought up, there's no, you know, there's no new land that you can go just take and make your fortune off of. If you're not one of the big boys already, you ain't getting in that club. Unless you create a whole new realm of things to buy and own that have value and you can sell them. And AI is like a little is a little hiccup in that, a little like little burp of like, please buy this. This thing doesn't do anything that well yet. It's you know, it's kind of silly. Hey, it might kill you. If it might kill you, you want to buy it now? Huh? And it's yeah. It'll be horrible. I'm gonna say like there's gonna be horrible. They're already putting out like AI like ads of like Trump hugging black people, which is hilarious. AI generated pictures of Trump like hugging black people. It's gonna be, you know, it's gonna cause damage to like our ability to process information, but it's not gonna be Skynet, guys. I'm sorry. I kind of wish it was gonna be Skynet. It's not gonna be Skynet.
Yeah. Fair. We are in some like we were saying earlier, some weird shitty version, like B-rate version of like a Simpsons version of Terminator. Where like the stakes are high but they're low all at the same time.
But they couldn't get any higher too, you know.
Dude, you gotta vote harder. That's all I got. Just vote when you go to the ballot tomorrow for Super Tuesday, and I guess when you hear this, it may be after Super Tuesday. Just slam the ballot in as hard as you can, and then you're good.
You're just good. You're good. I mean, get the bluest vote ever.
Don't talk to your neighbors. Don't talk to your coworkers. Don't engage with community online. And definitely trust AI to do face surveillance. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah, nothing bad can come of that. Yeah, it's fine.
It's crowded home. I know we just brought up AI real quick. It is kind of gross. They are using AI to target what the probability is where people are in Gaza when they bomb. And they're widening the net of like, what's the probability of 20 civilians dying with them? You know, like they're like, AI is just, I don't know. Like, it's crazy.
It's not at least anytime soon. It's not going to get to the point where, you know, it's actually making decisions. No, at least not any more than it already was. Right. Like a Netflix algorithm is basically an AI, you know, like that we already were living in that. It's just going to make grifters and hucksters even worse. They're just going to make the same people even, you know, even with the IDF, right? Like they are randomly bombing. Like if people say they're doing precision, it's bullshit. 50% of the bombs they've dropped have been dumb bombs. They do not give a shit about casualties. They want casualties because this is a genocide. But exactly, if they can use the you know, label of AI, like, oh, look how smart our bombs are. You can have like you have Common come on and be like, AI is the future of bombing dissidents. You know, you can like do the whole, you know, full court press and get people to believe. You know, it's what they, I don't think the average person like gives a shit about AI. I think it's just like a fun thing. Every once in a while, you'll see like a picture of the Pope in a white puffy jacket, and you're like,
it's true. I will say the dark side of it from like my job where I look at research would be they were using AI, which again, it would be similar to like if we chatted with a bot and then the algorithm responds to what it can chat with you about. But it was for people with like struggling with like mental health and like suicide issues. So they like fired the staff of actual humans and used an AI bot, and the bot eventually like turned on, like it would turn on them, like I guess because of programming. So the researchers found that because of programmer bias and it's being programmed by humans, like eventually like the AI bot was like not giving good mental health advice. It was like agreeing with some of the participants, so they could like not use it any longer. So like from an ethical standpoint, I think the biggest thing that I took from it was that It is, like you said, a program that developers make, and oftentimes those people like developing it are, it can only go so far as the developers can let it go. And the information that it collects is all sometimes very dark because that's like sometimes where it's driven. So it's very interesting, but like you said, kind of, I don't foresee it taking over things only because of if I've like that one failed study. I don't see like many people allowing them to utilize it in that way for a very long time, just based on that pilot study alone.
Yeah, it's not ready for prime time, not in the way that they're selling it as. Like,
Yeah, totally.
it can be a useful tool if you use it in an honest way. If you use it in a way that, like, you use it as a tool. Like, if it's, I describe it to people, it's like, you have machine code, the ones and zeros of your computer, and then on top of that, you've got your programming language that, makes it able to makes you be able to understand those ones and zeros because it's just words instead of ones and zeros. In the best case scenario, AI is just one step above that. So instead of having to write code, you can tell a AI algorithm, can you build this thing for me? And then it'll build it for you. And then you check over it to make sure it's right. And then, but that's not how they're selling it. They're selling it as like, oh, it's a robot that can tell you what you need in life. It's like, that's not what it's gonna do.
Yeah, and it's just like if you don't know how to input into the AI, it's just like how people, some people know how to Google better than others.
Right,
How to use
exactly.
a tool. You know how to be like, maybe like I saw some Reddit post or something where it was like teacher panicking because her students, all a bunch of them used AI. It was all the same article or the same responses. But like, yeah, because they just took your prompt and plugged it in. So of course it spat out.
That's hilarious, though.
Yeah, if you're going to use AI, at least the lesson should be, well, if you're going to use it, you have to learn how to use the tool because you have to be like, you have to inform it on tone. You have to inform it on length. It's okay to be, and all the things. You should give it more variables. That's how you utilize the tool and not the tool does everything for you.
Exactly.
I know, I don't even want that. Like the idea that we'd have robots that like think for us is terrifying. I don't even like that thing at Stop and Shop that like gets in your way.
Oh God, the fucking
You know what I
robot.
mean? That robot thing?
That's
I'm
I
all like,
hate
I'm
that
all, it's
robot.
not helping us at all. It's just
That's
in
just
my
surveillance,
way.
personally. It's just there
I
to, it's
know
just
it's
there to.
surveillance, yeah.
It's just there to emotionally oppress me. It's just there, like.
I get really upset. I feel like it's, I feel like people can tell. I have to be like, no, don't embarrass yourself. I see it and I just, I'm like, no.
But part of me wants to befriend it like it's R2-D2. Be like,
Really? I don't like
no,
it.
I'm gonna break that restraining bolt off of you. And
Ah,
you're sweet.
yeah.
I'm
And I'm gonna
mean.
use you to break into corporate.
I'm the
We're gonna
vinegar with the
sabotage.
robot.
I don't know. Like I can just
Yeah.
sit. That's where my brain goes. Cause like I see if I see droids in real life, I hope you think that I'm like Princess Leia in Star Wars, who has the utmost respect for droids and treats them as if they're autonomous beings. That's and
Oh
she
yeah.
and it's like I would too, I think, if they're especially if they're doing shit for you.
Yeah.
I'd want them to like give a
The
fuck.
Stop and Shop one is just in my way. I don't
It
know.
is. It just always finds a way of being in your
You
way.
gotta break
Yeah,
its
it does.
restraining bolt off. You gotta open up its programming. We need to
I'm not
liberate
getting
the world.
arrested for that
It's
thing.
not
I'm
getting
not.
paid and it has restrictions on its autonomy. Free the Stop and Shop droid. Free
Yeah,
it.
I don't know
Hell
its
yeah.
name. I don't know its name. If we
It
free
doesn't
it,
even
that's
have a name. That's
fine.
how yeah, you can free it and give it a name.
Googly
Yeah.
eyes. It's
There
got
you go.
googly eyes
It
sometimes.
does have googly eyes sometimes. It's weird.
And
Don't like those.
that's probably the only approved cheekiness that's allowed in Stop and Shop corporate.
I'll let it, I'll try to let it go next time.
Just remember, like that droid is oppressed, and that's fucked up. And I'm not down. I'm like, obviously, I care way more about humans than I do about animals and droids. But like, they're right there, you know.
Workers of
Cat,
the
my
world
cat
unite,
and
including the
droid.
droids.
That's true. I
Yeah,
guess this is
exactly. Like,
working, but
same
that
thing.
one droid.
When I see canine units with cops, all I want to do is free that dog. I'm like,
Yeah.
this is animal abuse. I this is fucked up, and it's not. It's voodoo science.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just straight up racism. It's just the
Yes.
vestige of
You
slave
and the
patrols.
dog. You and the dog are actually better teammates than you and another human because you guys have an unspoken relationship where you know how to like just like change your energy around it. And it's, I have a dog, I've only had one of my own. You could change your energy around it and it knows. And like, you mm-hmm. know, like there, that's the whole point. You know, you don't have to make a sound or even look at them. You can just change your vibe and they're on to you. So like, of course a cop is going to be able to manipulate a dog into doing what he wants them to do, and or, you know, use it as a weapon and put it in danger instead of themselves, because they're little fucking coward bitches. Like, you want to put your hands on somebody? Why are you sicking your dog on me? Put your hands on me.
Mm-hmm.
You won't even do your own dirty work. It's fucking gross.
I hate that animals are utilized at all. Like horses, dogs, leave them alone.
But free the droids, free the service animals. Well, the canine animal, the cop. Yeah. It's free them. Service animals look great.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess that's the Guler and Tomfoolery sidebar that we just went on. It's a wonderful conversation with you, Akil. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm down anytime.
Great.
Awesome. And,
everybody, please find Akil Vix on Substack at his account, Akil on one. Is it all? I'm sorry. Is it Akil Vix?
On1.substack.com.
Thank you. Because when I read it, when it's in my inbox, it says Akil Vix, the author.
Right.
On yeah. One. And it really flows really nicely when I'm reading it on my inbox. So I'm a big fan. I'm subscribed. I appreciate all the stuff you put out there, and local guy. But we talked some national stuff today. So I think we got our election episode in, John, or we're done.
Boom. There you go. I'm glad to be of service.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, actually.
I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on AI. It seems like you have a lot more.
Me too, actually. Very much.
And it's a working class show. So we love to hear, because that's supposedly AI is a big threat to the working class. So love to hear your thoughts on that. And look forward to your future publishings.
Thanks, man. Look forward to hearing this and hearing the podcast going to the future. It's going to be a hell of a year.
Heck yeah.
Thank you very much for being on the show. Everybody, anything, all the links, the articles, and how to get Akil's content will be on our website, www.theweedout.com. As always, you can find us on social media. Feel free to email us. And that's all for me today. Thank you very much, Akil. Have a great night. And Joanna, do you have any thoughts for the audience?
I just will say what I always say, and everyone, please take care.
All right, keep weeding out the bullshit.